everything that's green is all draining to Lake Michigan. All those trees out there, the contours, bring that water and take it there. So Muskego's got a little problem. We've got another problem. But concerning this is that there's these incremental and possibly catastrophic impacts. So you've got 40 acres with an eight-foot fence around it, covered with compacted stone that will cause the water to run off into detention basins and then the surrounding wetlands and watersheds, just to summarize that. According to the developer, we've got up to 5,000 vehicles there for an average duration of 50 to 60 days. That's a lot of time for things to drip out. Where I'm going with this is we are going to have drippages and spillages and whatever. So they should be, they can be mediated, accommodated. There's things you can do to help prevent that or lessen the impacts when it happens. Why invite the catastrophe? This is a wetland. It's like a giant sponge. It's like a giant sponge. And right at the top of our watershed, we're going to bring in thousands and thousands of vehicles and let them have their way with the land. Again, I've got no problem with the development. It's this land usage on this site. Damaged vehicles leak, we know that. The pictures bear that out. The company has protocols in place to deal with the inevitable spills that we'll have on site. I read through that. It's good things. But it acknowledges the fact that there will be spills. And looking at the aerial photographs and their web photographs, there are. They're everywhere. There's black stains on everything. Point is, it happens, and we know it's going to be there. The first flush is the one we always worry about in storm waters. This stuff slowly accumulates, gets into the catch basins. That first flush comes through and pushes all that stuff downstream. It's just the reality. It's how storm system works. The issue, one of the issues before you is the natural resource special exception. And Franklin has taken it upon itself to protect natural resources because they're significant, not just because they're cool and they're neat to look at. They're part of the sustainability of this community. They're part of the functional ecosystem, the water. These are all the things that are out there. And Franklin has chosen not only to piggyback on what state and federal regulations protect the wetlands, but also it buffers around it, a larger, greater area. What you're being asked to do, besides everything else, is basically let them bulldoze, scrape the site clean, put a raincoat on it, shoot it all off to the edges. It doesn't make any sense to me in this location. The natural resource special exception process exists. The city created it because we realized that the restrictions were sometimes onerous, and they were put in place to accommodate unavoidable incidental impacts, not self-imposed by the applicant. The developers chose this site. Any number of other developments could go there, but basically they state in their material, it's a non-developable site unless we do this. They're just looking in the wrong place. And I think that's the message we need to get through them. As much respect as I have for the Environmental Commission, they did their review, they did their recommendation. I reread it twice. It does not speak to anything off-site. They focused on impacts to the protected natural resources and them going away. There's been no detailed research as to how the groundwater moves, what's out there. We've got this beautiful residential neighborhood going directly east, downstream of all of this. We got people living in two-story houses to be built, looking over an eight-foot fence. RVs, trucks, tractors, all of that folks higher than 8 feet. Think about it. This is the future of Franklin. It's our first one out there. We need to be smart about what we do. The environment is important. It's not just about making an exception to accommodate somebody to come in. It's about protecting Franklin's future livelihood. Thank you for your time.
Anyone else? Mr. Ritter.
Randy Ritter, 7621 Mission Hills Drive here in Franklin. Some of you might remember I was on the Plan Commission for 21 years. So I was involved with many activities over those years, including joint meetings with other boards and commissions to try to improve our economic development planning. I'm here tonight to speak on what Assemblyman Skronsky and Commissioner Haley have spoken on and spoken very well. And just by the way, there used to be a time limit on what you could say in public comment. When you've got somebody who really knows what they're talking about and has got really good stuff to say, I'm glad you did away with the time limit. I will try to keep it quick. Going back to all the years when we had so many activities by so many groups to try to work on bettering our economic development, I don't think 44 acres of auto salvage is what we had in mind. In fact, I will guarantee you that it was not what we had in mind. Now, I know you're only dealing with an environmental impact part of it, that some of the other stuff has already been done. But if it's not too late to get this thing stopped, I would encourage you to take whatever means you could to follow the advice that you've been given for the very sound reasons that you have been given, and try to not bring this in, at least in this location. This is undeveloped land at this point. I think we, years ago, envisioned a whole lot better things than auto salvage for Franklin. I don't know why this has gotten as far as it has gotten, and I don't even want to speculate on just exactly why that might have been, because it's hard to come up with a good answer. But I would encourage you to listen to what you've been told. As even Commissioner Haley, my drainage experience goes back to growing up on a farm. I have personal experience at installing drainage tile even when I was a kid. It's been around that long and a whole lot longer, and it's just as important now, and the consequences are just as significant now as they were generations ago. So I certainly encourage you to give full credence to Commissioner Haley's comments and think this through thoroughly. I don't know, maybe you're thinking, well, this is just temporary. It's bare land now. It'll be there for a few years, and then something better will come along. Well, don't count on ever seeing that yourselves. Is that what you want to leave for the future generations of Franklin? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ritter. Anyone else? Mr. Mills.
Thank you. S.R. Mills, 4011 80th Street, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Very appreciative of all the time and effort. Certainly this, we've been numerous meetings. Franklin's been a great partner to us and in conjunction, and very excited to continue to move that forward in whatever capacity that looks like. I'm proud to say, as we've talked with Alderman Nelson, we've took terrible time to start moving dirt when you get 3 inches of rain in 24 hours, but working through that, and excited though that to see the overall project come to fruition. This particular site we've been working on since August, September, I think, is when of 2019 is when we originally started our meetings. Our first commission hearing, we received plan commission, I think it was unanimous plan commission, and common council approval in relation to the 33 acres. Again, we have kind of two components here. The 33 acres was rezoned to M2 December of 19. At that time, as many of you remember, but not all, part of the reason we could not rezone that last five acre usable component was because of a split zoning regulation that you're not supposed to have two different zonings on a single parcel. So we worked through that process, as well as the natural resource exception and obtaining all of the approvals and permits and everything needed there. So that's really what puts us here today. So I'm just going to, again, briefly talk about the rezone and the natural resource exception. Again, what we're talking about is a rezone from M1 to M2. This usable acreage is approximately 5 acres that we're talking about. Right now it's zoned M1. I've heard a lot of the comments here this evening that it's a salvage yard. If that was in fact true, we wouldn't need to be looking for a rezone. It's not a salvage yard, because salvage yards are allowed within M1 zoning. We're likely the neighbor, we're certainly with the most economically to lose on this. We have a very large investment to the north and to the east. If we thought it was a bad decision, we wouldn't propose this. Frankly, we like the M2 rezone because it, at least as in relation to this, is more restrictive and has, you can't do salvage yards within an M2. So that's part of the reason that we think this makes sense. Related back to the natural resource exception, again, I just want to put into context, we're talking about 9,900 plus or minus square feet. This is land that it's an area really devoid of any vegetation. I believe there's some pictures that were attached in your packets. Anything that I typically think of wetland properties, vegetation, this really doesn't have that. This area has been farmed, we think, probably in excess of 100 years. I think the mapping goes back to 1937. It's been farmed since that time. So it's really a wetland because of topography and some old soils, et cetera, which it's a very low quality wetland just because, again, it's being farmed. So what we're proposing to do is to take a very low-quality wetland with no vegetation and create a high-quality, high-functioning wetland and mitigate that just to the northeast, so it's still functional in the same basin area for the wetlands, to so it's a higher quality, and it, all of the comments about filtering the water, cleaning it, slowing it down are all very important things, and so it's part of the reason that we're happy to mitigate it and create more high-quality wetlands. The I think just a couple of other points that I've heard in the commentary tonight. You know, we have a big impediment for future development in this area to the southwest. It's the landfill back there. So I think just by nature of what's there, we're going to only have so many allowable uses when we look at redevelopment, notably industrial, as we talk about the proposed rezone site here into the south. We're very comfortable with the single family to the northeast, the 79 lots. Again, we have a lot of action on those now. We're looking forward to bringing them to homeowners and selling the end product. I think some of it, even when we talk about the impact it will or won't have, I believe later in your agenda tonight you have an additional subdivision directly across the street. So I don't think that the we don't see this as a negative relating back to the subdivision. I'm here for any additional comments you might have. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else under citizens' comment?
Good evening. My name is Rick Donner. I'm the attorney for Copart. My address is 1000 North of Water Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Appreciate the opportunity to be before you this evening. So, as you know, Copart is a publicly traded company with over $19 billion in assets and more than 240 locations worldwide. Copart is excited about the opportunity to invest in the city of Franklin. I just wanted to touch on two points that were in the staff report and some of the comments made tonight. First, in follow-up to what Mr. Mills said and what was in the staff report, the zoning request tonight for being made tonight from M1 to M2 is a more restrictive zoning. Salvage yards, used motor vehicle parts sales, and tire sales are all allowed in the M1 current zoning. They're not allowed in the M2 zoning. Additionally, the proposed rezoning to M2 is consistent with the city's comprehensive master plan. Second, the staff report, and again, another point that made by Mr. Mills and in the staff report, what we're talking about is a 10-acre section of the 44-acre parcel. The previous 33-acre section was approved, the rezoning was approved unanimously by this council back in December. The second point from the staff report I just wanted to touch on was a report that was included from the city engineer describing a Copart facility in Caledonia. Just wanted to give a little background information on that. The facility in Caledonia is a temporary overflow lot that Copart has been using for less than a year. Copart's client base is expanding. Their clients include insurance companies, licensed dealers, financial institutions, charities, municipalities, and fleet operators. So Copart needs additional storage space, which is why it's developing in Milwaukee and proposes this site in Franklin. The lot is a temporary solution to address Copart's storage needs. Regarding the condition of these vehicles at the Caledonia lot, as described in the report, the vehicles belong to Copart's clients. Copart never takes ownership of the vehicles, despite a previous commentary tonight. Additionally, Copart can't predict what the vehicles are going to look like before it gets them. It also can't tell a client it will only take vehicles in a certain condition. Part of the service that Copart provides is a space for damaged vehicles to go while its clients figure out what to do. So when there are wildfires in California and floods in Houston, the cars can be efficiently removed to a Copart facility and cleanup can begin. The report speculates that in 4 to 6 months, the damaged vehicles it describes will be moved to Copart. This is less than accurate for a few reasons. First, the Copart facility will not be ready in 4 to 6 months. If those cars were to go anywhere, they would go to a Milwaukee facility. Second, there's a misunderstanding there in that what Copart does. The reality is the damaged cars noted in that report won't be around before either facility in Milwaukee or Franklin is completed. If there's a significant car accident, what happens? The drivers call their insurance companies. The insurance companies have the vehicles towed to their preferred auto body garage. The garage determines if the vehicle is totaled. If it's totaled, the insurance company has the vehicle brought to a Copart facility. As a sidebar, it's important to note that a vast majority of the fluids that may be leaking, as talked about tonight, as a result of the accident, come out at the accident site or the body shop during the assessment process, not at a Copart facility. And Copart, like its neighbors, will also be on a well system. When the vehicle arrives at a Copart facility, it is inspected, photographed, and placed into storage. Once in storage, it is made available for sale on Copart's auction website for purchase by Copart registered members only. It's not available to the general public. Typically, if a vehicle is not sold within approximately 60 days, maybe because it's so severely damaged, the insurance company sells it to a salvage operation. The salvage operator then promptly removes the vehicle from the Copart facility intact in one piece. So severely damaged cars are not going to sit for years at a Copart site, unlike they would at a junkyard. So to remind everyone, there is no stacking, dismantling, performing of mechanical repairs, removal of tires or batteries, crushing, draining of fluids, or sale of parts at a Copart facility. It is not a used car lot, and the facility is not open to the public. Representatives from Copart are here and available to answer questions. Thank you.
Okay. This is citizens' comment period. Another citizen wishing to speak. Anybody else? Okay, seeing no one else rise, I'm going to close citizens' comment period. We do have other business this evening that I'd like to move on to, which includes item number two, which is mayoral announcements, which we have transformed into our Emergency Operations Command Staff report on the COVID-19 epidemic. That leads us to our health officer, Ms. Day, with some good news.
Good evening. Thank you for taking the time to get the latest update from us on Franklin's response to the COVID-19 outbreak. I'm going to do three quick things and then open it up for questions or comments because there's been a lot of changes since I've been in front of you 2 weeks ago. So the most current numbers as of 5 o'clock this evening for Franklin, 90 positive cases out of 894 total tested, for approximately 10% positive rate. In Milwaukee County, there are 5,185 positive cases out of a total tested of 33,366. And Wisconsin positive is 12,885 out of a total of 148,237, so approximately 160,000 tests. So with that being said, testing numbers are going up astronomically on the state and local level. A lot of testing centers have been established in the community. We have two active right now run by the National Guard in the city of Milwaukee that Franklin residents have been taking a part in over the last week. And those testing sites continue this week from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. No reservations are needed. You can get tested there whether you are symptomatic or not. So it does circumvent some of the barriers we were seeing with the healthcare system and testing. So with increase in testing numbers of people being tested, the number of positives will go up naturally. But what I can say is that the rate of positivity in the city of Franklin is actually going down. So as more people are being tested, we used to be at about a 12 or 13% positive rate. We're at about 10 now. So these are all good things. Same thing with the state. The positivity rate has been going down over the last few weeks. However, again, with recent changes, we may see those numbers tick up a little bit, but that's to be expected with some of the loosening of restrictions. Again, we've placed the information for the COVID community sites on the website and on social media so that people can get those directions, dates, and times. Then, as I'm sure you're all aware, last week, Wednesday, the Wisconsin Supreme Court overturned the governor's Safer at Home order that was issued by Secretary Andrea Palm. And basically what that means is that all of the plans that were in place on the state level were essentially nullified at that particular point. Wednesday evening, the health officers of Milwaukee County met, promptly starting at 5 o'clock, to discuss next steps within the county. As we've done throughout the entire duration of the outbreak, the 12 of us have always bounced ideas off of each other and tried to be together as much as we could in Milwaukee County, having 12 health departments and so many municipalities. We still feel it is important for us to do as much as we can in conjunction with each other, as people do travel frequently from community to community. So with that being said, we reviewed what we had already been discussing in anticipation of the Safer at Home order being struck down. We had a draft of a plan that we were able to come to a consensus on, and later that evening held a meeting with the majority of the mayors, village presidents, and city attorneys to make sure that the steps we were taking moving forward were in fact still legal under current local guidelines and state statute. Upon the consensus of the group that what we were proposing for a one-week temporary order was still in line with state statute and local ordinance, we proceeded with a temporary one-week order that began, well, I'd say Wednesday at about 11 o'clock p.m. and will go until midnight this Thursday, opening a few things, hair salons were in retail stores that were not previously open to a capacity. The main things that remained closed were things that we considered to be a little bit of a higher risk to community just based on the congregate nature of those establishments, so restaurants, bars, gyms, those types of establishments.